Hello and welcome to the East to West WLS podcast, where we support the bariatric community with humor, humility, and honesty. I'm April and I'm the West.
And I'm Jason and I'm the East.
Today we are thrilled to be welcoming one of the most influential members of our weight loss surgery community, Kedrick. Hi, Kedrick.
Hey, what's up, guys? How y'all doing?
Good. Really well. Dude, we are so excited to talk to you. We love your podcast. We love your feed. We love your honesty. And we know that you're really passionate about speaking to the importance of following the rules after surgery. So we know this conversation is going to be so beneficial to people who are either pre-op or a post-op, because I think it's just really going to solidify the importance of making sure that we stay the course when we kind of get that desire to fall off the rails a little bit. So before I open it up, Kedrick, to you, just to introduce yourself, I want to let our listeners know that if podcasting is not your favorite way of learning, you can pop over to our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube and search East the number 2 underscore WLS, and our amazing podcast channel will pop up where you can see us. We're very adorable, and these gentlemen are very handsome, and we're pretty animated when we talk. So if you would prefer to watch us there, you should probably hop on over there and do it. And of course, you can subscribe to our channel, just like you can subscribe to this podcast, and you will be the first to know when new episodes drop. And if you haven't noticed, it's happening all the time, which is a very good thing. So like and subscribe to us there. Okay. Kedrick, will you take a moment and just introduce our listeners and our watchers to you? Who are you? Where do you live? How old are you? When did you have weight loss surgery? And why are you so passionate about supporting this community?
Sure, absolutely. Kedrick Barrett, of course, I'm in Atlanta, Georgia area. I've been here now probably 15 years, originally from Memphis, 46 years old, and married, three boys, 22, 19, and now 17. Yeah, I get that right somewhere now. That shows you I'm an old man now. I kind of think about them ages. Don't ask me about my wife. I might get in trouble. Yeah.
There you go.
You know, we got to keep those dates in check. Now, I remember those dates, but don't ask me what those dates are. So definitely that. We've been married now 19 years. And for the better part of 30 plus years, I've been overweight. I was a fat kid. Just, you know, no bad childhood or anything like that. I had a great childhood. We just loved to eat. I just come from a family where cooking was everything, and we did everything with food. You know, somebody went a basketball game. We're going to eat. Somebody went to the championship. Somebody died. We're going to eat. Everything that you could think of that would happen in somebody's life that meant anything, we celebrated with food. So it just kind of grew from there. And then I come from parents who know how to cook. My mom, she's one of 10 children. Her father was a sharecropper. He had his own, they had their own land. They planted their own food. My grandmother was a great cook. She taught my mom how to cook. So that passed on. And then you got to think about it. They're used to cooking for a large number of people. So when you learn to cook in bulk, you tend to do that all the time. So my mom, she was a cook. So then my dad, he took on a second career after getting hurt on the job. He ended up couldn't go back to that job. So part of the settlement, they said they would send him to school. So he decided to go to culinary school. Keep in mind, I'm still a teenager. He goes to culinary school. So now I got the best of both worlds. I got a trained chef in the house. And then my mom, who's just a country girl who can cook. So yeah, that's just the story of my life. And you know, I learned how to cook myself, and it just kind of went from there.
Well, hearing your history, I think, is going to resonate with a lot of people. I come from a family with women who love to cook and are good at it, and where food was a part of just everyday life. And like you said, anything happens, you eat, you celebrate with food. Right. And it's a way that our families have kind of learned to show love and affection and appreciation. So it's really hard to separate those two when it becomes something that's not so healthy, right? Something that's grounded and rooted in love and family and affection all of a sudden gets to the point where now it's damaging to our health. And that's really hard to, it's hard to overcome, and it's hard to battle back against. Absolutely.
Oh, yeah. Wow. It definitely is.
Oh, okay. Well, I'm super, super excited about this conversation. You guys ready to dive in?
Let's jump into it.
Let's do it. Hey guys, it's April. If you've been following us for a while, you know that my favorite hot beverage is Retreat Drinks Hot Cacao.
I love it because it's made with four simple organic ingredients: cacao, coconut cream, maple, and Himalayan salt. That's it. It is decadent and creamy and just hits the spot when I need something sweet. And the best part about it, it's not going to break my macro bank. If you want to give it a try, visit their website, retreatdrinks.com, and use the code EASTTOWEST to get 20% off your first order.
All right. So Kendra, tell us a little bit more about yourself. What do you do in your professional life? What do you enjoy in your personal life? Kind of what makes you you, or how did you end up where you are here today?
Okay. Yeah. I forgot to mention I had VSG surgery in April of 2019. I forgot all about that. I'm sorry.
It's all good.
It's been 20 months, almost 2 years. I'll be almost 2 years post-op. And so far to date, I have lost about 225 pounds. So yeah,
Holy shit, a
whopping 225 pounds. So that just go, I was 461 pounds at my heaviest. And yeah, here we are. This is where I am. Yeah. So outside of that, profession wise, I am, I work here in the Georgia film industry. I'm part of the Teamsters Local Union 728. Okay. In that union, I do transportation. So I'm part of the transportation, the Teamsters Union, go Teamsters. We supply whatever moves on movie sets or television sets, whatever moves transportation does it. But primarily I have kind of found my niche. I drive anything. I can drive anything from 18 wheelers to, you know, trucks, you name it, SUVs, limousines, whatever. But I kind of found my niche as I've been a cash driver mainly. I mainly deal with cast and I pick them up from wherever they are, whether they're at a rental house here or hotels or whatever, bring them to set. I'm responsible for them, you know, whatever they need, you know, to get where they need to be and, you know, then taking them back home. So most recently, I just finished a show right before Thanksgiving and I was working on the Genius, Nat Geo. They have a series called Genius.
Yes.
And this season for Genius, they're doing Aretha Franklin.
Oh, wow.
And yeah, Cynthia Erivo is playing Aretha Franklin. And I was her personal driver for this show. And it was great. You know, met a lot of great people. Courtney Vance is in it. Paulette Washington, who's Denzel Washington's wife, she's in it. T.I., a bunch of different people that are in this movie. David Cross is in it. I think you probably know him from, I think, Alvin and the Chipmunks and a bunch of other stuff. Funny guy, really funny guy. Just a bunch of people are in it, and it just kind of goes through a little bit of Aretha Franklin's history. So that's kind of what I do in a nutshell. I mean, I'm at work a lot when I'm at work because, you know, we could be on set anywhere from 10 to some. I've been on set as long as 21 hours a day.
Oh, my God.
But I'm not physically working. I'm pretty much not doing anything. My wife says it's the laziest job I've ever had in the world. And yeah, it attributed to once I started doing this about almost 5 years ago. And I think I probably gained another 60 pounds doing it because, and this is why I'm kind of tying into what I do, because there they have to take care of you pretty much. So while you're there, they're going to feed you. And when I say they feed you, oh man, they feed you. There's catering. Outside of catering, they have what they call crafty, who does snacks in between catering meals. And but those snacks are really meals. I'll just put it to you like this. And then crafty also would have what they call the crafty trailer. On this trailer, it's like a mobile store. Any and everything that you can think of is in this trailer, from snacks to food. You can go in there and make a sandwich. You can, and now, but I will say this, there are healthy options. So you don't have an excuse. You don't have to eat the bad stuff. But at that time, I was eating all the bad stuff. So I would go in there and grab a pocket full of Snickers, Twinkies, Ho-Hos, you name it. I come out here like I came out of the store and I go load up in my vehicle, whatever I'm driving. And I'm watching, you know, they're filming and I'm watching Netflix and I got my feet kicked up and I'm gaining all this weight. So I was already overweight. So jumping into the movie industry just helped me put on more and more and more pounds. And it just got to a point to where my livelihood was at stake. My mobility was getting pretty bad and my health problems, my conditions were increasing. And it was just spiraling out of control because I was no longer a an active, really considered to be active worker, because I just drove. And when I brought the person, whoever I had, from point A to point B, I'm sitting there chilling until they're done. So yeah, it just got to be crazy.
Well, and I would imagine too, it's not like, you know, your job is to be ready at any moment for that person, right, to drive those people around. So it isn't like you could have necessarily, you know, gone to the gym or done something active or, right, or moved your body. Your job was just to sit there and be ready for that. So, so not only were you around all of this delicious food, but your job is literally to be sedentary and just to be at the ready, which is it's a very necessary job. But yeah, when you combine those two things, that is kind of a recipe for disaster. Absolutely.
Yeah, it was horrible for me.
Well, yeah.
And at the same time, you can also, anybody that's listening, watching this, anybody that's been where we've been pre-op, ain't nobody going in there grabbing bananas and shit when you got trays full of the good stuff sitting there and it's at the ready for whatever you want to grab. Nobody grabbing a banana and an orange. We're going straight for all the good stuff because it's there in abundance and you don't want it to go to waste. So why not?
Why the hell not? Man, I'm grabbing Cokes. You know, candy. I was a huge candy freak ever since I was a kid. No, you know, I knew about all the candies and shit when they was getting ready to drop Skittles, you know, all the hard candies, now latest, you know, Blow Pops, all of that shit. So, and this, all this stuff is on here, Lemon Heads, you name it, all the hood candy is what I call it. They got every, and then this is the kicker. If they don't have what you're looking for, then you tell the person that's there, hey, look, I'm looking for this. It'll be there in the next 2 or 3 hours because they're going to make it. They go to Sam's or Costco sometimes twice a day. So they're going to get it for you.
You have got to be shitting me. Oh, my God.
They'll enable you.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Okay, so I have to ask you this. So you knew that you were your weight was ballooning. You knew that you were becoming, like you said, an inactive, you know, person on the job and just in your life. Why do you think you were not able to make the healthy choices in the moment when you were working? Why did you always, I'm just going to say the word always, and I don't mean to put words in your mouth, but right, more times than not, you went for the not so healthy options versus the healthy options. Why do you think that was? And why is it different now? Because you've lost 220 pounds. So clearly you're not eating those foods all the time anymore. So what do you think is, what was your before? Why were you not able to? And now after surgery, why are you able to make those different choices?
Well, you got to think that when we make the choices that we make, they say, what does it take? 21 days to make a habit.
I think it's even longer than that.
And so you got to think, I had been so used to doing what I want, eating what I want for so many years. It was just like second nature. I didn't even realize I was so bad off because I was so, this was normal to me, you know, and eating an overabundance had become the norm. And as you eat more and more, the stomach is open wide up to where you can just bring in more and more food. And then it's almost like you get the feeling of never being satisfied. And I think that's what it was. And it's like the light never went on or it stopped coming on. It was my check engine light probably had been on since I was in my 20s. You know, like if you don't get that check engine looked at, it's sooner or later, you're going to run into this issue. So my check engine light for me was the signal that I was full. I wasn't getting that anymore. So I would just eat until I probably damn near would make myself sick sometimes. And it was beyond ridiculous and it was just out of control. And that's why I always tell people that this is an addiction. You know, just like somebody who's on drugs, I know everybody out there who haven't went through what we went through think that we're full of shit and they think it's bullshit, but it's not. Mm-mm. This is truly an addiction.
Well, and I'm so, yes, I agree with everything that you just said, because I find my own story in your story. I got to the point where I could eat and eat and eat and never feel full. I might've physically felt full, but my addiction was so strong. And that desire to seek fullness was just brain games for me. Right. And like you said, you can just keep eating and eating and eating and your brain overpowers your actual physical feeling of hunger, right? So it just didn't, I couldn't actually listen to my body. I couldn't hear that my body was telling me I was full. I would just keep eating because, like you said, there's this desire in you to fill up, but you never get full. And I've heard drug addicts say that, right? The first time that they try a drug, they have this euphoric high, and then they're constantly desiring that high, but they can never get back there. But they keep trying because you get hooked. It's just like, oh my God, that felt the most amazing. And I'm just going to keep doing that until I can find it again. But then pretty soon after you do it so often, now that becomes normal. Now this is just what I do. And now my body and my brain is expecting that I'm going to continue to do this. And, and then you throw in your eyesight and all of your other senses. When you see food, you get triggered. When you smell food, you get triggered. When you hear food, you get triggered. So like for your job, you say you walk into this trailer, oh my gosh, how am I going to overpower my desire to eat the things that have given me that sense of high before? Of course, I'm not going to go for the bananas or the salad. I'm going to go for, the chips and the candy, because that's where that high came from. And unless you're experiencing that, unless you have experienced that, you just don't know what it's like. And people who don't have that addiction to food can't comprehend what we're going through. Just like I can't comprehend what a drug addict is going through. I don't understand that, but I kind of do now because I've got the food thing. Right. It's just,
people don't realize too, that you get to a point of eating where you'll, even if you start to kind of feel full, but if you know you want to keep going, you can push through what they call the wall. Like you'll feel it kind of coming, but you'll just keep going until you've blown past that. And, it's almost like you can feel your stomach expanding and giving you that little extra room you're looking for to power through whatever it is you want to keep eating on. Mm-hmm. And I remember there's times clearing out a four patty burger and being like, I could have done the six. Like now I'm kind of pissed. Yeah. I didn't get the six patty burger. Like, and then there's my fries and then there's my son's fries because he didn't eat all those. So, it's just the ridiculousness of what it was like to be trapped in that kind of mindset. And what the people that haven't had the surgery don't understand is how free you feel when your mind is no longer trapped in that kind of mindset, when you can kind of break out of that and step away and step aside from that. It's just a feeling like I've never felt before until after I had the surgery.
Absolutely.
So how do you react now when you see candy or when you see the foods? Because you're still in the industry, so you're still around all of these temptations. So how has your mindset shifted, or how have things changed for you? Because you've lost 220 pounds. That's amazing.
Yeah, and I there's no way I'm going back. No way in hell. I can't. I'm enjoying the life that I have now, and I feel so much better. I haven't felt this good in 30 years, I know. So now, like pandemic wise, we were shut down from March. I think I went back late September to finish the show that I was working. And when I went back, and most of the people there had already, you get to be family with a lot of people. And the crew that I work with, they all know my situation because they knew me prior to the surgery. And I end up having surgery. I was in the middle of a show and 2019, so I was with this same crew, so they kind of know what to expect and know how to be around me. But now, as far as catering goes, I would go by, see what they have, and you can fix your plate, and it's up to you what you put on it. So I've already trained myself how to eat, and I know what to eat. And then even snack wise, if I do a snack, the people that were in Crafty, especially on this show, they were so great with it. The two ladies there were such sweethearts. They knew my situation. And like, if they ordered out, so sometimes they would cook a lot of the snacks, but sometimes they would order out. So if they would order out, then like, say for instance, they had Jersey Mike's, they would order Jersey Mike's subs. So they would get the bowl for me as opposed to getting the bread. Or if they would get like the chicken salad or something and set that, instead of putting it on the bread, put the chicken salad in another bowl for me by itself with just, the protein. And same thing with if they were cooking something, or they would just cook something specifically for me that I could eat. And they knew I couldn't eat a lot. So it would be, I would come up and I would get my little small portion and it was good, you know, so they were great. I will say that people, if you let people know what your circumstances are, you'd be surprised how accommodating they would be to you. And I know a lot of us in the community kind of tend to want to shy away from telling people what our circumstances and situations are because, you know, I guess, I don't know, some people just, I tell it to anybody who want to hear, hey, I had weight loss surgery. I don't give a shit what you think.
Right.
But when you open your mouth and you let people know what's going on, you'll find out that there are more people for you than there are against you. Those few people that are against you, they don't have any bearing or weight to do with what's going on with you anyway. They're just going to be the naysayers who sit in the corner who talk shit about everybody.
Right.
You bring up such a powerful, you know, reason for sharing our stories. And I think, you know, people are going to know, people, if you work with them, you're going to so drastically transform. They know that something's up. And, you know, unlike any other addiction out there, we really can't hide our addiction to food because of our size. But I think when people see you change so rapidly and they see kind of the real you coming out again, they're so excited for you and they're so happy for you that I think they're motivated to be a part of your new future, right? They're motivated to be a part of your solution or your problem solving. They don't want to do things that will hinder or be bad for you. They really genuinely want to help you because they're so excited and proud and they're just, you know, they see you doing something so monumental. They see you overcoming something, right? Everybody loves a champion. Everybody loves the person who perseveres. And we are actually a physical embodiment of that. And they're physically watching our transformation unfold before their very eyes. And most people really want to be a part of that. That's inspiring to them.
Well, and the amount of people that say, you know, well, I didn't want to tell anybody because I didn't think anybody would support the decision, or I don't really know how anybody's going to feel about it. I figured out that I had more people tell me they were worried about me and my physical health before I had surgery. And now they breathe so much easier knowing that I'm getting healthier and that I'm better than I was, that they never said to me when I was 468 pounds. Like I'm carrying myself around, you know, and I look at the old pictures and videos and I'm like, how could y'all not say anything? Like y'all see me struggling. Like you could damn near see the chocolate milk in my veins while I'm talking to you, you know, blood types, gravy and shit. And y'all just don't say anything. Y'all are just like, hey, what's up? Tons of fun. How you doing? And I'm like, y'all can't just at least be like, dude, you're big as shit. Like, I'm going to need you to calm it down. But no, they're just like, hey, what's up? And I'm like, dude, like,
and they keep it moving.
My weight, apparently, like, that's what's up. Like, CK, y'all that's just, what's up. Just let me roll through. Like,
you know what? It's 2 points. April 1st, you mentioned about people and, you know, people wanting to see, they love the hero. America's built on that. Everybody loves the comeback story. They love the hero story movie. You can watch a movie, you know, in the beginning, no matter what it is, if it's a hero movie, you know, it's going to be bad for them in the, you know, and during the middle, they're going to go through a period, they might get captured. Eventually they escape. Guess what? They overcome it happily ever after. That's what this country is built on. It's built on the happily ever after. So you got to think that people, and there are always going to be people out there who want to see you lose. Let's just put that out there. There's going to always be somebody out there that wants to see you lose. But at the same time, people are so many people that'll be rooting for you because they love a good turnaround comeback story. And to see you at your worst and then to come back in all your newfound glory and see how you are living now, it's phenomenal. People love to see that. They thrive off of that. It's almost like they've, you know, been watching a TV show. And then Jason, like what you were saying, you know, I got that so much, you know, well, you was how much? You weighed how much? You didn't look that big. Now, when I look at my before and after pictures, I say bullshit.
Right. Exactly. You got to be kidding me.
Right.
I look at it. I look at my pictures now and I'm like, how the hell did I get that big? And why did nobody say nothing to me?
Man, look, I say it all the time. Somebody said that to me. They're like, well, you just didn't look that big. And I'm like, well, then you need to go get your prescription on your glasses checked because you bought the wrong pair. Something ain't going right because I did look that big. I sounded that big. Like when you hear, like when people video me, like I watch video of me from back then, I'm like, you can hear me breathing. Like, come on, man. Like, you didn't know I was that big. You knew I was struggling. Like, come on. So I'm like, I just got done wrestling and all I was doing was standing there.
you knew I was coming to the room before I got there because you could hear my legs and shit scrubbing together. And if I had on any type of material that was damn near like vinyl or plastic or something, you can hear a jogging suit or something. You heard me coming, so that's bullshit.
Couldn't wear corduroy, just start a damn fire.
Oh, and then hell, you'd burn the crotch out to some bitches. They would be just smooth as shit. The crotch in your pants because your thighs is rubbing together. Man, don't get me started on that. Hey,
right.
They said, when I was a kid, my grandmother used to laugh. She's like, man, you got teeth in between your thighs. Cause you know, you get them damn holes and shit. They would wear out from walking and scrub your legs and scrub together so much. You got big ass holes in your pants, man.
Yes.
Please.
Yes.
I have never heard that before and I am dead. Oh my God. Oh my God.
Yes, sir.
You know, and I think we've all experienced that. And I've talked with my friends and my family about it. In fact, I had the opportunity, I recorded with my girlfriends and I just asked them like, why the hell did you not say something to me? And I think what it really comes down to is that those people really only saw the true us, right? They loved us for who we were and what we contributed to the world and our personality. And they were able to look beyond the size. And it's almost like this lens of love, right? And we hear this when talking about addiction and all kinds of things, but people can love you to death. And it's true. They love you, right? They love your soul. They love what you're made of, your values, your beliefs, you know, your, all of these things. And I think what makes the decision of weight loss surgery so difficult for so many people is that a lot of us really love who we are. And yeah, we're very much afraid that weight loss surgery is going to change that. And we're not willing to give this up. And why would we? Because so many people in our lives love us, even though we're 300, 400, 500, 600 pounds. And it's very scary to think or to be worried that, oh my God, I'm really going to change. But I don't know about you guys, but you know, I'm 17 or 18 months out. I'm 120 pounds down. There is not an ounce of my core, of my soul, that has changed after weight loss surgery, right? The package has changed. My look has changed. But if anything, the parts of my identity that were killing me have taken a back seat. And the parts of my identity that are truly me just have more space to shine and to come out. And it's a gift and a curse, I think, of weight loss surgery. It's a curse because it prevents us from making the decision to have it, I think, for so many years. And it's a gift once we finally are released from that worry, right? Or that concern, right? Because I think you guys can say the same thing. You guys haven't changed as a person, who you are.
No. No,
right?
Absolutely not.
No, just your look has.
I think you kind of look at it like with animals. You know, you got certain animals that shed, you know, going into a new season. For lack of better analogy, I'm not a snake, but I would use a snake. You know, a snake still it will shed its skin. You'll see it sometimes in your yard. If you're walking in the woods, you'll see the shell of what was them. And they got new skin. But that snake is still a snake. Don't make a damn difference that he shed that skin. He's still a damn snake. Same thing with me. I might have shed 30 years worth of snake skin because it wasn't just that little, you know, snake is going to be a little bit of skin. I had 225 pounds of snake skin to get rid of, but I'm still cared. I'm not a snake, though. I can be if you cross me, but, hey, you know.
I love that analogy. So, okay, so I got to ask you, we've been asking everybody that we've been interviewing lately, did you believe with 100% certainty that weight loss surgery would work for you before your procedure?
Nope, absolutely not. I had jumped through so many hoops, not necessarily for this surgery. I'm just saying in general, period, trying to lose the weight. And everything I did, I failed at it miserably to no avail. In the beginning, I said, okay, this is my last resort. I got to try something. I'm going to exhaust all measures. So this was, to me, was like the last thing to try. And I was really not saying that I was saying that it wasn't. I didn't have the mindset that it wouldn't work, but I just didn't feel like, and deep down, I'm like, okay, well, I didn't think I would have the success that I had. I pretty sure like that. I figured I might lose a few, you know, pounds, and then I would go, you know, kind of level off, and that would be it, because that was the gist of what I was doing when I was working out. I had the last thing I did before I did the weight loss surgery, I did boot camp. I had dropped like 40, 50 pounds. I got close to 400 pounds. I got to 406 pounds, and I just couldn't crack $3.99 for shit. Like women that's trying to get into Wonderland, I couldn't get into $3.99 land of threes for shit. And I just, you know, I got the 406. That was as close as I got. And then I jumped into the film industry and couldn't go back to boot camp. And then it just went back up and back up until I got to my worst at 461 pounds. And I just, I had the surgery and it was like, it came in steps. I started losing. I got down to like 410. I was like, holy shit, here we go again. Am I going to get out of it? And the day that I got to like, I think I got on the scale and it was down to 397 pounds. I was like, holy shit, I might be on to something here. So then I actually started to put in the real work. Not to say that I wasn't following the program in the beginning, but I was kind of just going through the motions. But once I saw that the shit was working for me, it lit a fire under me that came seemingly out of, I won't say it came out of nowhere. It probably was always there, but it was like finally getting that damn pilot light lit, and it's cold as shit in the house. You know, it take you forever to get it lit, but once it's lit, it's on fire. And that's exactly what it was. Once I got under 400 pounds, I was like, man, it was like, let me hit the next interval. And I didn't put too much on myself. So I started doing in steps. I said, well, if I got to, you know, 397, let's get to 375, you know, let's get to 350, 325, 300. Oh man, we cooking with hot grease. Now I'm under 200 pounds, 200 and something pounds. So then I was like, wow, you know, I had to take a step back and, you know, it just become unbelievable at that point. And it, to everybody else, it was the same. They was like, dude, you're melting. Then I start getting the, you know, you need to stop. You've lost enough. Fuck out of here, man. Don't tell me I've lost enough. Let me make that decision. You didn't tell me that I had gained too much, so you don't get to tell me that I need to stop.
Exactly.
I thank you for sharing that. I feel the exact same way that you do, and I felt a little bit alone in my hesitation. But yeah, I was 99% sure it would work. I was 1% convinced it would not work because like you, I had done everything in the past. I had lost weight, but I wasn't able to crack these certain numbers. And I realized I didn't know how to actually live at a healthy weight. And it always came back. And I was exactly like you too. I was like, well, okay, I've lost 40 pounds before. Oh, I've lost 60 pounds before. And then all of a sudden it was like, oh shit, I'm down 80 pounds. I haven't seen this number since middle school. And then it was, oh shit, I did it 100 pounds. And at that point it was like, okay, now I really need to put in the work. Now I really need to, you know, to fully commit to this. And I'm like you, I'm never going back. I don't know what has shifted. I don't know what has caused it, but for some reason that fear of the weight coming back is gone. I can look back now and there's nothing there. And it's the weirdest feeling in the world. Because I've never, ever experienced that before. So what do you think has shifted for you? What's been like the magic thing that you can, you know, sit with us here today and say the weight is never coming back?
Hey, it's April with East to West WLS. I don't know about you, but after I dropped a significant amount of weight, my body just didn't feel like my own and I needed help feeling like it was my own again. So I started receiving chiropractic care. If you live in the Tacoma area, I cannot recommend Grit City Chiro more. Dr. McKenzie is passionate about helping you feel, function, and live better. Check out her Instagram at Grit City Chiro or her website, gritcitychiropractic.com, for more info and to book your first consultation. And if you mention East to West, you'll get a discount on your first visit. I feel amazing after seeing her, and I think you will too.
I think, and it still goes on to this day, you find out every day that you can do more and more things that you couldn't do or that you were afraid to do as an overweight person. You know, the non-scale victories to me are the best. They are. That is like your proof. That's your timestamp to say, hey, I did it. You know, when you're starting to be able to, and Jason, you're going to attest to this. Women, you know, you guys, they give you a little bit more grace. It's almost like when you go into department stores and the malls and stuff like that, they only want to see a certain size person come in there. They don't want us big people in there, you know, so much so that they kicked the men out pretty much altogether. They gave us our own little corner of the world. And then we're going to put this horrible adjective on it and label it big and tall. You don't think we fucking know that? We don't know that shit. I don't need you to put that shit on my store. So I got to go up here and watch this sign. There was only one store, really, for me, and that was DXL. You know, there was king size. That's even worse, king size. You know, you can order offline from a place called King Size. That's the most embarrassing shit in the world. And then, or you can go to DXL, Destination X Extra Large. That's basically what that shit stands for. And yeah, it's big and tall. What a horrible way to label a group of people. And I don't care what nobody says. Yeah, we know it's our own fault. Nobody forced us to put fork to mouth, but you, that still don't give you, that's just like, you know, if you see an ugly, as kids, if it was an ugly kid, you know, your mom would be like, don't say that. He can't help because he's ugly, right? Same shit applies to, you know, overweight people and anybody and anything that's going on with them. You don't have the right to put that label on them. And they put that label on it and it's stuck. You know, you walk into the mall and then you're looking and you hate to even ask, hey, do you have a big and tall section? You know, you're almost whispering and shit. And then the person, the clerk is going, oh yeah, big and tall is gonna be right over in the hole over there in the back by the bathroom where you can smell people taking shit. You know, that's where they've got it at. You know, they got you, or for women, you go, they say, well, at least they would give y'all a little bit better derivative. They say, well, we call it woman's world, but they got y'all. I remember all Macy's is gonna be on the bottom level on the third floor in the basement where you gotta go and buy your it's clothing. Still, and I just,
it plus size. Right, plus size or queen.
Yeah,
queen. You had the king. We had the queen size. Cool.
It's,
thanks.
It's ridiculous, I think that narrative needs to change for one, and for me now to just be able to walk through the mall and just shop, I traded one addiction for another, because I couldn't do any of these things, and for so many years I love Macy's because they have some of the most killer deals. I was able to buy my son or whatever. You know, my wife could go in there and get different stuff. But I could only go in there and maybe buy cologne. I couldn't even get shoes because my feet were so wide. They only had, they didn't have wides. They had just regular size shoes. So, you know, I could only go in there and get cologne. That was it. Maybe, you know, and I didn't really wear out or a watch. I didn't really. And then if even I got a watch, I would have to either, I couldn't wear it that day because I had to buy extra links. Now I got to wait for them to ship me that shit. One time though, I did make them because I was like, I'm spending this kind of money on this Michael Kors smartwatch. I made them break open, and I bought this watch some years. My wife actually bought it for me for our anniversary about 4 or 5 years ago, and it was the very first smartwatch that Michael Kors came out with, but it was so new, they didn't even have the links available yet. And so when I come back with the box, and I'm like, so you don't have any links? My wife has bought me this watch. What do you want me to do with it? And she was like, well, we can give you money back. I said, no, what you're going to do is you're going to get your manager, because you're going to take this one that's on display right here and you're going to give me two of them links out of there.
Dang. And but that's crazy that that's what you had to go through just to utilize a gift that was given to you.
Right. And that's the extreme that we have to deal with. And so she was like, well, I don't know if my manager's going to do it. I said, well, go and bring them over here to me so I can find out if they're going to do it. I'm not going to just take your word for it. Manager comes over, more than well accommodating. He was like, this watch is going to sit here forever. It's the display.
Yeah.
It doesn't even have a battery in it. It's just here as a display. Taking two links out is not going to hurt it.
No.
So they took the two links out. I got to watch the rest of history. But just to be able to do stuff like that, the biggest one to me still, nothing trumps it, was I was able to get on a roller coaster with my kids last year. Nothing will ever trump that, because their entire life, I was never able to do that. Never.
Whoa. Wow. So
that to me was the biggest moment ever. And I cried like a baby when I got off. I didn't let my boys see me. I let them walk on ahead. But I was like, it was unreal. And I got on it. I was able to fit. And about 30 seconds into it, I said, this is the biggest mistake I've ever made. I am too old for this shit. And as we're going all the way up, I was on the Georgia Scorcher at Six Flags. And as we're going up, and I'm looking at, and I see all these loop-de-loops and shit. I was like, holy shit. And it went, those were the longest 90 seconds, and I was screaming like a bitch. And yeah, I had a ball. It was a lot of fun, though. It was fun.
No, those are amazing times. And I know, I echo exactly what you're talking about with the Big and Tall store, because I actually used to work at DXL before it was DXL, when it was Casual Male. But it was Casual Male Big and Tall. And I was an assistant manager there before I was big. So that was the worst part, is I couldn't even fit the stuff that I would wear. I would buy like 2XLTs and stuff like that, because I was tall. I'm long bodied, so that stuff fit. But looking back at it now, going through, I remember looking at people that would come in and buy like 60, 58 and 60 pants. And I'm like, damn, like, I don't understand how that happens. And then cut to 15 years later, and my ass is in a 58 pant. And I'm like, that's how it happens. Dude. Okay, I get it. But luckily, in that time frame, the choices to buy clothes at that store had greatly improved, because back then the shit wasn't nothing but polyester pants and banded bottom polos.
It was horrible. Those shirts, I hated with a passion. I would wear t-shirts before I would wear those ugly ass banded bottom polo shirts. And I got up to a 58 pants too, and I got a pair of them upstairs that I keep just to let me know. And I put them on, and I got both legs and one leg. And I mean, hell, they about this, a pair of drapes. It can be a tarp. If something was to happen to the roof, I can put it on top of the roof. They were big as shit. That's why I'm like, how the fuck was I not? Did you say I was? I didn't look that big. Do you see these pants? I mean, the belt, I can use it to, if we get down into a ditch and they don't have any rope in that, I can take out my fucking belt. And they can pull the damn car up. I mean, come on, man. That's just.
I went through the same thing. I kept a pair of shorts. I had a pair of pants for a while, but now I've kept a pair of shorts and a golf shirt that I had, not only to remember just the size frame of it, but to remember that alone, just the fact that the shorts and the shirt together were $130 for one single outfit of a damn Reebok golf shirt and a pair of Reebok golf shorts.
And that's the worst thing in the world, because they tax us to death. And I don't believe that. They act like it took a whole cow to make those fucking pants. You know, they say, well, it costs for more material. Nah, come on, man. I mean, and you know, from just working in DXL, they stepped into some luxury brands. And those luxury brands were very, very, very expensive. It would be costly. You can go in there and buy a Ralph Lauren. You get one shirt from Ralph Lauren, it'd be either $98.50 or $125. I know those prices hold too well.
For a polo or a button. Yeah, it's ridiculous. Yeah. I remember, what's funny is I remember saying the same things to these people back in 1997 when I worked there. I was like, look, people don't want to wear this shit, because I was one of the youngest people to work there. And once I bumped up into management, I'm talking to the district manager like, look, you guys need to bring in some better shit, because nobody wants to wear this. You got kids coming in here every single night looking for stuff that are teenagers, and they're not going to wear polyester, brown polyester ass pants and a banded bottom polo. And I was telling them at the time, I'm like, you need to get some Echo in here. You need to get Polo in here. You need to get Tommy in here. And they're like, can you imagine the price point on that stuff? And I'm like, I can, but people, I promise you, they'll buy it because they want to look like everybody else.
That you just said the magic word. I want to look like everybody else. They got this one brand in there that's their house brand. It's Harbor Bay. I call it Horrible Bay. Horrible Bay, mm-hmm. because the pants were, they weren't hip. They were just regular old plain ass jeans. Mm-hmm. For a while, that's all they had. Now you could find some Levi's in there. You might get some Levi's. That would be about the gist of it. You might get some Levi's. Then all of a sudden, they start getting in some more of the urban brands. Like you said, the Echo, they got some Tommy in. Mm-hmm. What was the other brand, Jason, that they had that was their brand, but it was a more hip brand of the jeans? Now, I did have a few pair of those jeans. I can't remember.
They ended up with, they went with True Religion was one of the ones they went with.
Yeah, but the prices on that have got to be astronomical. I mean, a pair of regular True Religions are $200-$300 bucks. So if you're buying them in the plus size or the bigger, and that's ridiculous. That's like a fat tax. It's obesity tax, right? And that's a hidden cost that you have to pay just because you're larger, which is No, yeah, wrong on so many levels.
It's totally wrong. The prices are exorbitant. It's through the roof. It's unreal. The shoes, they had, you know, they would have the ugly shoes, and then they would have the good shoes. And the good shoes, yeah. I mean, they would have the Kohans. Oh my God, Kohan is a nice shoe. But mm-hmm. Kohan, but now I will say Kohan for regular people is expensive too. It's the same price.
Yes.
But yeah, you're going to pay $160, $165 unless you catch them on sale. You're going to spend a grip for some Kohans.
Well, and as Jason, he and I were talking about it on an earlier podcast episode, you know, it's one thing. So if a brand is, you know, it has awoken to this tax that they're putting on people unfairly, and they charge the same price no matter what size it is, the issue then becomes your size means that that product is going to deteriorate at a much faster rate. So Jason was talking about, you know, how he's going through, you know, 10 pairs of shoes a year because he kept blowing out the shoe. So even though he was paying, you know, $200 for these shoes that were made for him, he'd go through them once a month. And it's just another way that our size really dictates the quality of our life and even our financial health, because we're moving through products at a much faster rate than other people. So not only is your weight keeping you back in physical senses, it's keeping you back in financial ways as well that you don't even think about. You just don't realize the scope of impact that our heavier weight has on our lives until we're no longer that size, until we can sit back and go, oh my God, I didn't even realize this, and this.
Yeah,
the economic impact is unreal.
Right.
Well, I used to collect Jordans, and I had 44 pair of Jordans that once I got to a certain size, I couldn't fit not one pair on my foot. Like, it killed my feet. So I ended up giving them, I split them between my son and my nephew, and I just was like, here, y'all have a ball. Like, take them and go fuck, tear it up. And eventually, I don't have not one pair left in my name. They're all torn up.
I'm rebuilding shoes right now because I had gotten so big, and you know, as you get big, your feet get big too. Your feet stretches, and they you know. So I was wearing a size 15 shoe.
Yeah.
And as I kept losing the weight, the shoe was like, I'm like, damn, this shoe is too big. And I got measured before, and it said I was like 14 and a half, right at a 15, right? Mm-hmm. So as I'm chugging along, time goes by. I get out to 220 pounds, and I'm like, you know, I had a pair of running shoes that I bought, and just me saying that in the same breath as me talking is ridiculous for one, because running and Kendrick didn't mix. There was no running. Only, I mean, you know, what I consider running was if I was trying to beat somebody to the counter at the fast food restaurant to get my food first. That shit don't count either, because that was at a slow speed walk. I had a pair of, so I got these running shoes early on, and they were a size 15. And as I kept losing the weight, they were like too damn big. I'm like, and I thought maybe they was just too wide, but they was a regular shoe. And so I went back, and so I tried on a 14. I'm like, damn, this is too big too in the shoes. I had bought a Jordan. It's funny you mentioned, I bought the ones. The ones already seem like they kind of run big anyway. And so my feet started looking like boats. And you know, the kids was laughing. They're like, Dad, your shoes are too damn big. You know, they're too big. So I ended up back in a 13, what I was in high school, two sizes. So I got all these shoes. But no, luckily though, one of my boys, my middle son, who's 6'7", he wears a 15. So I was able to give him some of those shoes. I sold some of them because I spent a lot of money, like you, Jason, I spent a lot of money on some of these shoes. So I sold some of them. I still got some in the closet that I just haven't let go of yet. My son is trying to get them from me. I'm like, man, I got to sell these. Let me see if I can make some money off of them first, because I've spent too much money on these damn Nike. And I'm just, you know, finding as I get older, I said, well, maybe I need to settle more into the shoes that I'm, you know, comfortable wearing. Because even now, that I bought a pair of the ones, again, the 13s, those Jordans, and it's like you put them on and like, damn, they fit kind of tight. But even skinny people have that problem where these certain shoes, they just fit. You know, unless you just got that small, narrow-ass foot, you're going to still have
the midsoles on the ones run so narrow that it really doesn't matter. Like you said, unless you've got like an A wide foot, because I know I'm still rocking an E at least.
And man, I got them shoes on, and I got a picture. I took a picture of them yesterday. That's the first time I wore them. I put them on the first time to go to work one day, And I got downstairs and I went right back upstairs and I took them some bitches off and put them right back in the floor. I was like, I'm not wearing it because I'm going to die in these all day.
Yep.
And so now me and my wife were joking and we were in, we had went to Nordstrom Rack because they, and you know, you think Nordstrom, you think it's ridiculously priced, but they got this store Nordstrom Rack here and it's cheap as shit. And I went in there and we was like looking at shoes. I'm like, who knew? So I'm like, they got all the good stuff, Cole Haans, you name it, but they're not at the $160 price. Some of them like 50, 60 bucks. So I said, I'm from now on, you know, I'm going to stop trying to go for the flashy look and I'm going to start acting my age and I'm just going to buy. I still want some, you know, nice trendy shoes, but I got to have them for comfort now. You know, I'm too old to be walking around here with my feet hurting and shit, trying to look all good and some Jordans. I ain't buying no more damn Jordans.
That's why I'm going back to, I got to get me one pair of 11s and I need a pair of 5s. Those are the two most comfortable pair. I got married in 11s and the 5s are still my favorites. So I still got to rock at least one pair of each of those and then I'll go back to for the comfort.
My dad never bought those shoes. He said, I'm not buying nobody's shoes for no. And back then they were like $125 when I was in school. Yep. And I had got me a little part-time job. And I bought my first pair, and my dad was like, you a fool. They had came in a little box. They came in. I bought the Jordan 3s, Jason. Yeah. I had the true blues. And yep. I bought them a few years ago before I had the surgery when they released them again, and I got them in a 15. They're in my closet right now. I don't have the heart to depart with them because that was my first pair that I bought myself. And I got to find them again in 13. But those were the most comfortable with me, and those were the best ones to me. And I got those ones that I just got. But I can't get rid of them 15 True Blues, man. Those are my favorites.
I don't blame you. I used to have to go around and collect money from I had to collect money from my mom's parents, my mom, my dad, and my dad's parents, and then I could go buy a pair.
Man, my dad was like, I refuse it. But he was like, I can buy you these Zips over here. You can get these Zips. You know, that's at my price range that I'm willing to buy. I'm like, Pops, you don't understand. You know, you heard the song by what Fresh Prince, Parents Don't Understand. That was real. Kids would rag you to no end if you didn't come in with the fly gear on. At least you got to have it. Even if they just the bottom of the barrel Nikes, they got to at least say Nike. You can't come in with Pro Wings or, you know, the Payless shoes, the MA100s. You just couldn't come in with those. And my dad was like, nah, B, if you're going, you better get you a job. So I went and found me a job because I refused to go to school and get talked about, mainly because I was probably one of the kids that was talking about other kids. But that's a whole nother story. But in my defense, guys, I was a fat kid. So guess what? I got picked on a lot. Mm-hmm. So I had to develop a tough skin. And it was either I was going to be go home with my feelings hurt, crying about it all the time, or I learned the gift of gab and I got swift at the tongue. And I learned that I could use words that would pierce your soul and it would get you off me. And like now, people are always telling me when I put those disclaimers in the captions and stuff like that, and somebody was like, man, somebody inboxed me. I won't say who it was. They was like, man, you ain't got no chill. You don't know how to stop, do you? I don't. Because it would be so many people saying fat kid, you know, fat this, fat ass that. I had to go for the jugular because I felt like if I hit you where it hurt immediately, you would stop. And I got into a lot of fights because most of the time it ended up going back to their mothers. And don't let me have seen your mom for real. And she's got some flaws. Oh my God, it was open season. And I'm still like that today. It shaped who I am. I mean, it did. It just shaped who I was.
Hey guys, it's April. I just want to give a shout out to our very first podcast sponsor, Gather Juice Company. They're located in my backyard. That's right, Grit City, Tacoma, Washington. And their juices, shots, cleanses, and toasts have really made a difference in my bariatric recovery. If you live locally, swing by their 6th Avenue location and pick up something that you will enjoy yourself. And if you don't live locally, send them a quick direct message and just let them know you appreciate their sponsorship of East to West. You've got this, and we've got you.
Well, and the thing that Jason and I, we appreciate a lot of things about you, but the thing that stands out to he and I the most is that you have got no time for people that want to come at you with judgment or questioning how and why you're going about your weight loss surgery recovery. And I know that one of the things that you are most passionate about speaking to is following your doctor's orders, because I know that was how you got to a successful place. And what we were talking about earlier before we started recording, you absolutely need to follow what they are telling you to do for you to lose the weight. But once you have gotten to that healthy weight for yourself, and once you have kind of understood your relationship or your addiction to food, things are going to look different, and they can look different, and they should look different, right? So like you were saying the other day, you posted something about sweet potato pie, and just today you were posting about the Philly cheesesteaks, right, that you were making. And people have this idea that you're going to have to live like an alien for the rest of your life after weight loss surgery because so much is off the table. And that's just absolutely not the case at all. So will you kind of speak to this? Will you, tell us about why you're so passionate about, about sticking to what your doctor says, and so passionate about calling people out on their judgments for how you're choosing to live after weight loss surgery?
Oh, absolutely. I just feel like I'll speak to both, but first I'll start with being a stickler for following my doctor's plan. I felt like if I was going to invest this much time, my insurance required me to do six months of dietitian visits, doctor visits. I had to go through a battery of tests, a psych evaluation, the whole nine. If I was going to go through all of this to get to this point, and then I have a successful surgery and I wake up and get off this table, then I'm going to go out here and try my best to do what I'm supposed to do. My doctor, he gave me this binder. I'm sure everybody gets either a binder, a booklet, or a notebook, or whatever they give you. I call it the Bible. It's a Bible for us. And, I learned a long time ago an acronym for Bible was basic instructions before leaving Earth. Tie it to this whole thing. This is your instruction. This is your manual right here. This is what you can't listen to everybody, because everybody's not going to tell you good stuff. I had people tell me, oh man, I was, I skipped the liquids. I went straight into, I was eating puree 2 days out. I didn't listen to any of that. I listened to my nutritionist. One, if I had any questions, I called my nutritionist. And if I couldn't get her, I called my doctor. And my doctor would always find me an answer. I bugged them to no end. And the biggest takeaway for me and my doctor had this conversation. We had many conversations before I got to the table. And he said, the biggest thing that you're going to do that you're not going to like, because I know you do it right now, is eating and drinking at the same time. And I know some people do it, that you can do it now. Absolutely, you can. You probably could have do it back before, even so many people get so many months post-op. To each his own. I don't judge anybody for doing it, but I don't. I won't ever do it again. And he said he doesn't do it, and he's not even overweight. There's a science behind it. The science behind it is if you're eating and drinking at the same time, your stomach expands with liquids. So if you're eating food, you're bringing in solid foods and liquids. Guess what? It's got to settle before it goes through the plumbing to get to where it needs to go. So while it's settling, guess what? Your stomach is going to expand. And that allows you to eat more and more food. So that's how I got to be in the position that I'm in, because I would go to a restaurant. It would be nothing for me to have five Cokes. I get a Coke and I get four or five refills while I'm sitting here eating. I'm at a Mexican restaurant. I didn't sat here and ate, queso and chips first, a big bowl of queso and chips with beef in it. Then the next thing you know, I've got the platter that comes with two enchiladas, probably a tamale, which was my favorite, and a big ass taco, plus rice and beans. And, to wash it all down, I've had, four or five refills. So, doing that, you cause your stomach to expand. So back to what I was saying, my doctor said 15 minutes before a meal, and then 30 minutes after a meal. So if I've had water or something before a meal, I got to wait 15 minutes because I need this to go, let it run through the plumbing. And then after the meal, wait 30 minutes because I need for this food to go ahead and run its course. So then I can come behind and then drink. And I thought that was the stupidest thing in the world that he could have ever said, because I'm like, how in the hell? Because I'm going to be thirsty. I'm eating hot food, but I'm going to be thirsty. He said, Kendrick, I know it sounds crazy, but you got to do this in order to succeed in my program. He told me, he said, I don't do do-overs. He was like, you will not come back in here and get a revision from me. Period.
Oh,
wow.
And he was like, he said, that's my only disclaimer. I don't do revisions. And he was like, because I feel like I'm giving you this tool, and you know, and it's not knocking anybody that's had to have to do it. I understand right. things happen, but he in his mind, he said that you abused yourself and you didn't put yourself in the right position. You didn't properly educate yourself. You didn't take it seriously to get it done. I mean, to do it and go about it the right way. So at this point, I'm like, you know, and he wasn't a jerk about it. This is the greatest guy in the world. You know, I'm going to shout him out. Dr. Christopher Hart, Atlanta Bariatrics, his whole team. I had never been into a doctor's office where everybody is happy to be there. I thought it was bullshit when I walked in there the first time. I'm not going to lie to you. I get there. They welcome. They're so welcoming. You know, they take me around because, you know, the first time you got to go and meet everybody. You got to meet the dietitian. Mm-hmm. You got to meet the insurance people, everybody there. Everybody that worked in this guy's office is happy as shit. And I hadn't even got to the doctor yet. I'm like, what the fuck, man? Is this some type of Jim Jones game or something? You know,
drinking the Kool-Aid. Shit.
You know, everybody drinking this Kool-Aid. This some bullshit. So then I make it to the doctor. He comes in. His bedside manner is great. And first thing he told me, he said, man, you know what? He said, I know you're scared. I said, yeah, I'm scared. He's like, he said, you should be. He said, but I got the easy part. You got the hard part. I'm like, how so? He was like, I'm going to get you through the surgery. You're going to wake up. He said, you got to do the work after the fact. And after that, I was like, wow. You know, he left me with a lot of food for thought. And so I said, you know, if I make it through this process, the 6 months, I make it to the get approved for the surgery. I jumped through every hoop, hurdle, whatever they told me to do. I made it. I said, you know what? I got to do this. I can't fail. I got my family. And that was another thing, too. That was the biggest thing for me, is to have the other four people that, you know, are my immediate family looking back at me. And, like, they've watched me fail so many times. How can I let them down again, you know? And, you know, and then you, I had to think about how selfish I was for, you know, I'm depriving them of years with me. Going to be selfish with my wife because, you know, of course the vows say for better or for worse, but who wants to take care of somebody for worse when you don't have to? Now, I get it that things happen, but my for worse was going to be my own damn fault. You know, it wasn't like I was going to walk out and God forbid somebody hit me or something, and then I'm crippled, and then you got to take care of me that way. I was going to be crippled because I had diabetes, and they was going to end up cutting my toes off, eventually cutting my leg off. I was going to be blind. You know, all kind of morbidities that was going to have her to have to take care of me. And that wasn't going to be fair to her. Who wants to do that when they get into their 60s, 50s and 60s, when you're supposed to be living life and enjoying yourself and going, getting ready to go into their retirement age? Same thing with my kids, you know, being around so I can see what they do with their life. If they're going to have, give me some grandchildren, you know, just be here. I can tell you my grandfather, my dad's dad, we lost him at 51. I was 5 years old when he died. He was severely overweight. He was over 500 pounds. He was 6'5", a huge man, huge man, over 500 pounds. He had everything you could think of, you know, congestive heart failure, just died. You know, he died early. That's a young man.
Yeah.
And here I am in my 40s. I'm close to that age. You know, I'm 44 years old at the time. And I'm close to this age. So I'm like, am I going to live past my 50s? So that was something to think about. And then as far as people out here that I don't put up with their judgment, you got to judge me for 44 years of my life, because guess what? Every time I walked in the room, you snickered, you jeered, I heard all that. You know, you talked about me, oh, he's such a greedy fat ass, you know, blah, blah, blah. You got to do all that for so many years. You don't get to fucking judge me now that I've lost 225 pounds. And if I want to eat a goddamn Snicker bar, guess what? I'm going to eat a goddamn Snicker bar. But I've educated myself enough to know that, hey, if I'm going to eat this here, then something else is going to have to be replaced over here. I'm going to have to bust my ass more over here to burn this shit off. So fuck you and your judgment. Go judge something. I always, like my like the slogan says, don't judge me, judge your mammy. Stay the fuck away from me. Now, if I get back up to 400 pounds, you know, God forbid, another year or two, then you can come back and say whatever the hell you want to say.
Yeah.
But until then, kiss my whole ass.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, no, that's, I've said the same exact thing, because that's my deal. Like, don't do what I do. If you do what you want to do for yourself and don't worry about what I'm doing for myself, as long as I'm making the necessary adjustments on the back end and doing what I got to do. But you said something that really struck me also, talking about, you know, your wife saying for better, for worse, and taking care of you. That really struck a nerve with me. And I spoke about it on an earlier episode where, you know, I had real bad problems with my legs swelling and my skin got real thin. So anytime anything happened where I bumped my leg on anything, the skin came off and it would take, I had a sore on my leg that didn't heal for over a year until I finally went to wound care and got it taken care of. But I'm, you know, I'm at my biggest and I can't put my damn compression socks on myself because I can't get down there to do it. And my wife's having to put compression socks on me. She's having to doctor my legs. She's having to cut my damn toenails. She's having to do, you know, and I sat back and thought about it. And I finally looked at her one day and I broke down and I was just like, I'm fucking sorry. Like, and she's like, what are you talking about? I'm like, nobody in their right mind signs up for this shit. Like, you're not a nurse. You're not, like, this is not your job. Like, and I did this shit to myself. And you're the one holding the bag. And I'm sitting here, you know, just fat and happy. Like, hey, let's go get another cheeseburger once you're done putting my damn socks on.
Right.
Like, what the hell sense does that? Like, who in their right mind? Like, and I know there was a lot of times she probably wanted to slap the burger out of my hand and just be like, look, dumb, like, you can't even tie your shoes without passing out. And you're over here ordering double and triple and, you know, quadruple cheeseburgers like a moron. And, you know, and I'm just still deep in it. Like, it didn't bother me. Like, yeah, a whole pizza is what I'm going to eat. Why? What are you going to say about it? Like, I'm hungry and I want to eat, you know, acting like a 5-year-old. And, you know, and it really took that connection with her, you know, apologizing to her, knowing that I couldn't believe what I had done, not only to myself, but had done to her. It just wasn't fair.
Well, that's addiction. You guys are perfectly illustrating addiction. You put your addiction in front of yourself and the people you love the most. And unless you can look through the fog of addiction and really see the impact that it's having on our loved ones, we're never going to commit to surgery. We're never going to find ourselves waking up one day. But it takes these aha moments, right? It takes this realization of, oh, I really, truly am killing myself, right? And I don't want to go down that road to take these drastic steps. And, you know, as we've been saying often, you know, how you can lose the weight after surgery is simple. They give you a step-by-step guide. They tell you very clearly, here are the easy, simple things that you need to do, right, to find success. But easy and simple are not the same thing, right? Here's what you need to do. Now, actually implementing those things is what is challenging. But if you can get to the point, if you just follow what they say to do, and you do so with fidelity, you do it honestly, you will get to the point where you can enjoy a Snickers bar, you can have a cheeseburger, and it's not going to catapult you back into your old ways. It's not going to instantly put on 200 pounds again. But all of a sudden, your brain's going to go, you know, I would really like a Snickers bar. I'm going to have a Snickers bar, but I'm going to make up for that choice, that planned eating event, in the rest of my day and in the rest of my week. And that one planned eating event is not going to kick me into a spiral of unplanned eating events. The three of us can sit here and say, no, if I choose to have a cheeseburger, it's not going to mean I'm going to eat a cheeseburger now every day for the rest of my life. It's going to mean I'm going to enjoy that. And then I'm going to move on and I'm going to make healthy, nutritious decisions for the rest of my day and for the rest of my week. That's what I think is missing. And I know it's hard for me, Jason, I've been talking about it. It's hard for us to share some things that we eat that would be considered contraband to people in our community, right?
But the magic word is contraband.
Right, contraband. And it's not contraband, but it's also because Jason and I and
you feel. Yeah.
Right? Yeah, it's how you feel. It's
you're sneaking in like, oh, I'm not supposed to eat this. It's contraband.
Right? Yeah. But it isn't. It's a part of who we are and it's a part of our experience. And I shouldn't feel bad for eating something that I've planned in my day. But I'm so afraid to share that because, well, is that going to kick somebody off into their addiction? Right? Are they going to see me eating it and think that, oh, I can eat that every day? It's like, oh God, how do we tell people that when you get to this place in your recovery, it's really pretty kick ass because I can have a cheeseburger. I can have a Snickers bar. I can have some Cheetos. It doesn't mean that I'm going to go back. I'm not the same person that I was before surgery, right? How do I show people that? And I think what you do, Kedrick, is so powerful because you figured out how to show people that. You figured out how to let people know, hey, look, I can enjoy a Philly cheesesteak. Here's how I do it. Here's how I've made it for myself. Here's how I make it for my family. But don't confuse this. Don't think that this is how I eat every single day. You need to know that this is what I'm choosing to eat for this one singular meal. But let me show you the rest of my day. Let me show you the rest of my week. Let me show you the rest of my life, because it doesn't look like this every single day. And that's powerful. That's what's making a difference in people's lives.
Absolutely. And you can't deprive yourself of things, you know, because I know so many people that do it. Oh, I don't do this. I don't eat this. And now there are certain things that I just don't eat anymore. I mean, like, I don't do sodas at all, period. I don't do those because, I mean, they're not good for me. I haven't had a Coke in 2 years almost. Well, it's been 2 years. It's been about 2 years since I've had a Coke, you know, stuff like that. Breads. I mean, I do, you know, a little bit of bread here and there, but, you know, you got to think when we're eating now, and like you mentioned that cheeseburger, it's not like I can go out here and eat a double patty cheeseburger. I might get a smidgen of it. And if it's on bread, I'm really going to eat that much less of it because it's going to expand in the stomach anyway. So it's like, that's why I always tell people this is nowhere near being the easy way out, because planning out your meals and what you're going to eat. And I talked about this with somebody yesterday. It's almost like, I want to be able to maximize all the food that I can get in my small stomach. And I got to be picky because I know I can eat more of this and it's still going to be about the same as if I eat this. So that's where the strategy comes in. That's where the hard work comes in, because now you're coming from a person that used to be able to eat a 15 piece wings with a side of fries with no problem at all. And I still have that mindset. To this day, 2 years later, I still have the same mindset. I get pissed. I would be lying if I say I didn't. I get pissed on a regular basis, sometimes daily, because I'm sitting here like I'm knowing it's about to be time for me to eat because I'm hungry, but I'm not going to be able to eat all that I think I should be able to eat in my mind. So that is some of the things, the issues that we have to deal with. And it's for life. If I'm going to stay on track, this is for life. I can get so frustrated and I can just let myself go. God forbid, and I can just keep binging until I keep dumping, until I just stretch my stomach back out. Who wants to go through that? For one, who would want to make themselves sick that many times to even stretch the stomach out to begin with? That to me is ridiculous. And, you know, so like you were saying, April, about eating different things. It's all about looking at serving sizes, learning how to read labels. I have to learn how to read labels. You know, you can have those chips, but it don't mean eat the whole damn bag. Turn around on the back. It'll tell you how much a serving size it is and how many calories it is. And your stomach is going to tell you if you can hold even that whole serving size.
Yes. Yes.
Simple as that.
Yes. This is the work of weight loss surgery, right? People think that this is easy. It's like, well, you're just going to want to eat less, or you just eat less. Well, yeah, that's the tool. But the work of weight loss surgery is really thinking critically about what we're choosing to eat and making the healthy, nutritious decisions 99% of the time, right? And battling these thoughts in our brains that never go away, right? That's the work. But I got to ask you, and I think I already know your answer, which work would you rather do? The work that you're doing today or the work that you were doing 3 years ago before surgery?
Oh, easily the work that I'm doing today. You know, the work, because the work that I was doing before surgery wasn't work. It was counterproductive. It wasn't conducive to anything. It was making, you know, I would be miserable. You know, I would eat. I would feel good about the food that tasted good going down my throat. But the end result was I'm in misery. You know, I'm sitting here. You know, I ate so much to where my blood pressure is through the roof. I'm sitting here swimming in the head, you know, scared to go to sleep because I don't know if I'm going to wake up. But I ate good. Who wants that? I don't want that shit anymore. I'll take this frustration of not being able to be in that position before I take that position. And then, you know, hell, I can fit in my car. Now, shit, I like that. I can get in my damn car and I have to let the seat all the way back. I actually have to move my seat up some. People can ride behind me now and don't be mad. The only drawback, though, is if I ride with somebody else, I no longer have the free pass to ride in the front. You know, being the big guy, it was automatic.
That's true.
Kid got to get in the front seat. You know, he's got shotgun automatically. Now, get your ass in the back. All these years, we've been riding behind you, and you got the seat all the way back. Now it's time for you to get some of that punishment back. That's the only drawback. I mean, but I'll take that any day of the week. Because I'll tell you what, we were moving, and one of my sons was with me, and we were taking back the moving truck. And this is another thing. This past summer we moved, and I'll never do it again. I was really feeling myself. I found out how old I was when we moved, and we had been hiring movers for years. I told my wife, because it was kind of one of those things where the people that we were going to use was falling through, and I couldn't find anybody. And she was like, well, we can just wait till another week. I was like, nah, the boys, and then my oldest son, he's coming, he's in town, so we can all do it together. We can do it with the boys. And she's like, what? I was like, I've lost the weight. I can move, man.
No, and nobody's built for that. Nope.
I found out the hard way how old I was, one, and that I'm not built for that shit. But the biggest non-scale victory that came from that, we took the truck back, me and my youngest son, and we had to get an Uber back to the old house. And normally when I call Uber or Lyft, I'm always getting the XL because I want to make sure I can fit. I didn't even think to push any button. I just hit the button because I'm ready to go. I'm tired. The guy pulls up in a Prius, no lie. And I'm thinking there was the old me. I was like, how in the hell? I was like, I'm going to have to sit in this front seat, you know, and let the seat all the way back. But he had a bunch of shit in the front seat. So I had to get in the back. But I got in the back with no problem. I had leg room. And I was comfy as shit. And I couldn't believe it. I said, I'm in a damn Prius. Don't mean I'm going to go out and buy one.
Let's not get crazy now.
Let's not get crazy. I'm still, you know, a tall guy, so I'm not going to buy no shit like that. But just to know that you can fit and, you know, go to a restaurant and not have to, you know, wonder, you know, that whole game. Because that was like, man, that was the worst fear in the world. You know, you're on pins and needles. Everybody's looking at you like, is he going to fit when we get to this booth? And it's the most embarrassing thing in the world is to get there and then realize, you know, my stomach can't get in here. Then they got to take us to a table and everybody's watching. You got to take this walk of shame. That's one of the worst feelings in the world. Like being
on that's what I had talked about that before, about the whole having to go in and say, you know, we need a table, no booth. And, you know, you have to wait the extra time if there's a waiting list. But now to be able to go in and just say first available was amazing to me, because I had tried it to fit in a booth. You know, one day my wife was like, you want to try it? And the apprehension I felt, I was like, hell no, I don't want to try it. I was like, what the hell? I was like, why would I want to try that? Like, I know what's going to happen. And she was like, dude, no, you don't. She's like, go try. I slid right in there and had room. And she was like, see? And I'm like, oh, I mean, I guess, that's cool.
But you just don't know. And you know what? I think probably one of the last straws for me, Valentine's Day, before I made the decision to go have the surgery, what is the name of this? I can't even think of the name. Oh, the Melting Pot Fondue Restaurant. My wife wanted to go. We'd never been. All these years, we'd never been. So I made reservations on Valentine's Day to take her. We get there. I couldn't fit in the booth.
Oh. Well, so, that's all they have, right?
Well, that's what I thought. Then they was like, well, you can just kind of sit over here by the bar. We got regular tables by the bar, and they still got the fondue at those tables. But we get over there and there's like this large party with like 10 kids, and it was not romantic at all. And, you know, she's sitting across from me at this table instead of us sitting by each other. And we're supposed to do this whole fondue experience. It was ruined. And I felt so bad for her because she was like, you know, this wasn't romantic at all. It sucked. You know, she didn't say it, but I know that's how she felt.
Yeah.
You know, so you got to think about what you do to people when you put yourself into that position. So, I'll take this work any day. And then the last part about that is that, I get frustrated because I can't eat and consume like I used to. But the good part about it is I'll be hungry again in a few hours. So I'll be able to eat again.
Oh, look at that. There's always a silver lining. Always a silver lining.
It's the Chinese food effect. You give it an hour and a half and you'll be ready to go again.
I'm ready to go, baby.
Oh my gosh. Kedrick, we cannot thank you enough for your time today. We didn't even get to like half of the shit that we wanted to talk to you about, but hopefully that just means you'll come back again so we can continue this conversation.
I definitely will. I enjoyed myself. I really did.
Oh my goodness. Yeah. If you do not follow Kedrick, you absolutely have to. You can find him at Sleeved Believe the Hype on Instagram. And his podcast, you guys, is amazing. Absolutely amazing. So insightful, so real, honest, meaningful. It is absolutely worth every second of your listening time. So go find him on Instagram, find him on your podcast player app and subscribe. Again, sir, we just thank you so much for your time. Thank you for your honesty. Thank you for what you put out into this community. You're one of our greatest sources of inspiration. And the reason that I really enjoy learning from you is because your experience is so different from mine. That's why I get so much from Jason, right? His male perspective helps me check my female perspective, and your male perspective helps me check my own perspective. So we very much appreciate that. Jason, you want to take us out?
Yeah, man, we appreciate you again coming and being on the show. We can't wait to have you back again. It was fantastic. Everybody, we just want to thank you guys for all the support that you've given us up until this point and continuing to carry us on to be able to do what we're doing to help you guys, because it helps us in the long run at the same time. So all the help that this, you know, that our community needs, we love to be able to provide that as well as Kedrick. And we just really appreciate it. And just remember, at the end of the day, you've got this and we've got you, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks, guys.